Edvinka is an investment company exclusively dedicated to education. Edvinka is the fruit of a joint venture between Hambro Perks, the growth investment firm behind PyTop and Cortext, and DLF Venture, a family-owned holding company affiliated to Verdinvest, who have invested in some of the most successful edtech companies in Asia, like Baijiu's. At Edvinka, our aim is to help edtech startups make large-scale impact. We are active investors who like to think global. We invest in early-stage companies that we grow alongside their founders. We offer follow-on funding and deploy permanent capital to address our long-term vision. Please visit our website on www.edvinka.com to find out more about our mission and get in touch on info@edvinka.com if you want to discuss your edtech business with us.
Hello everyone and welcome to the EdTech Podcast. My name is Sophie Bailey and you are very welcome. The theme of this week's episode is Going International and brings together contributors from New York EdTech Week, the UK Department for International Trade China Team, the India Didactics Association, the Council of British International Schools, and the Swedish EdTech industry. Phew! You'll hear variously about educational systems in different countries, but also the schemes looking to support learners, educational institutions and edtech companies, domestic and incoming. All this is very fitting, as last week I moderated a discussion at South by Southwest EDU on global edtech, looking at the merits of various countries from a pedagogical, investment and learner outcome point of view. That episode will be coming out soon, along with many episodes recorded at South by. And hello to all the listeners I met in person at the event.
Hi.
Continuing the international theme, it was interesting to watch the US Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos, interview three edtech companies on stage at South by Southwest EDU, something I cannot imagine happening in the UK. The crowd were also intrigued by this format, wishing that their questions be answered by Betsy DeVos, the one with all the decision-making power, which seemed fair enough. This week, I'm off to the Global Education and Skills World Forum in Dubai, where I look forward to interviewing many innovative teacher practitioners from around the world. All that coming up on the podcast over the next few weeks. But first, a big thank you to Edvinka for supporting this episode of the EdTech Podcast. We're always on the lookout for ad sponsors and supporters of the podcast to help support our mission of improving the dialogue between ed and tech for better innovation and impact. So do get in touch if you'd like to review the content schedule and pick your episode to support. What else? This week I finally got my purse out and paid the venue deposit for the EdTech Podcast Festival. Ouch! Now I'm back from various travels, you'll start to see more about what we have in store, and early bird tickets are available by searching for the EdTech Podcast Festival on Eventbrite. Teacher Toolkit and JISC are among our early festival attendees. I also had the pleasure of showing Imperial's Makerspace lead, remember Kate McCulhey from episode 105, around the venue today to help her visualise a maker pop-up we will have on site. And finally, it would be remiss of me not to mention a few other events coming up. Firstly, big thanks to the commercial arm of the Austrian Embassy for hosting their EdTech event last night. I spoke extensively to Jesse from PyTop about his various pets, but I also learnt about the Austrian love of textbooks. Next up, London Tech Week. Go and check out their programme, which will feature more EdTech content this year and runs in London from the 11th to the 17th of June 2018. If you think that's all a bit London-centric, take a look at EduTech Africa, which is not until the 9th and the 10th of October in Johannesburg. And if you want something before all of that, check out our next meetup at Runway East in London on Monday, the April the 30th, 2018, on hiring and retaining talent, including advisory networks. All details are in the show notes. So see you soon. Well, I'm delighted to be on the line with Ash Kluarachi, who's co-founder of StartEd and producer of New York EdTech Week, which took place on December the 18th to the 20th. So welcome, Ash.
It's a pleasure to be here, Sophie.
So, Ash, what I was hoping you might be able to help some of our listeners with is just to get a sense of what took place at New York EdTech Week. For you, what were some of the highlights from that week?
Well, certainly happy to tell you a little bit more about those few days. As a little bit of background, we've run New York EdTech Week for about 3 years now, and we've gathered a little bit over 1,000 people each year, mostly investors, startup founders, students, and policymakers in and around NYU in Manhattan. This year, it was, I think, our best year yet in the quality of programming that the community and we at StartEd put together. And I want to point to a couple of things. One was a morning on Tuesday that we called the intersection of Broadway and education, and it comprises of both performances and luminary speakers speaking about everything, about the problems in education, all the way from pre-K to K-12, higher ed, and corporate learning. And it's also interspersed with performances from companies teaching K-12 students about how to conduct science experiments using rap. That morning is really about framing out each of the challenges we see or our community has seen in the U.S. that year at all points in the learning life cycle. We had some very interesting talks from Eva Moskowitz from Success Chartered Academies. We had Michael and Olga Block talking about their basis schools. We had Sean Elms talking about his unique partnership with the University of Rochester in building out a high school in partnership with the university. And the three of them do a talk, and then also are interviewed on stage. They were interviewed by Eric Gertler, who head of U.S. News and World Report. That was the first series of talks and interview. And then later in the morning, we had David Coleman speak as well, who is the president of College Board, along with Jeff Rosen, who is the president of the National Constitution Center, and they were interviewed by Jeannie Allen, the CEO for the Center for Education Reform, about is education following what was set forth in the initial constitution when the U.S. was founded, and what are the most important ways that higher ed is being innovated on based on the founding principles of the country. So I thought those, and Jeff and David are very compelling speakers. It's actually even more compelling to see them to their rapport on stage. So that was one part of the festival, which I thought most folks found very compelling.
Very interesting. And were there any sort of surprises that you weren't expecting during the week?
Certainly. I think from my perspective, in terms of what people spoke about and what people found compelling, we introduced this concept of a masterclass this year. So it's something that we did to highlight specific educators. We had masterclasses that were around blockchain in education. We had masterclasses around VR and AR and how immersive learning is driving learning in the field. And people really do like to literally learn at festivals and conferences, and we can create an environment where people really are attracted to that and tends to be very popular.
What's the biggest thing on your mind right now?
Well, right now I'm looking at figuring out what the new next version of New York EdTech Week looks like. I think the vision for us is that this is kind of a almost like a fashion week for education, in that it's really the community bringing programming and compelling speakers and companies and educators to the forefront. And New York City becomes a stage for showcasing the innovation that it takes place here and elsewhere around the world. So for me, I'm really looking forward to following up on some of the most amazing conversations I had over those 3 or 4 days with superintendents, with some of our investors, some of the companies from the Indian and Chinese ecosystems that were very interested in getting involved, and seeing how we can frame a program around that, not just in December this year, but smaller pop-ups over the course of the year, the leading up to it, precursors to New York Tech Week, if you will, very similar to what we did together last year, which was New York Tech Week in London.
Absolutely. And do you have any other exciting travel outside of London on your schedule?
I do have some travel. Some of it exciting, some of it not. most excited about some of the smaller ecosystems that are really banding together. For example, there's a new EdTech community around the work that Grand Forman's doing at the EdTech Garage in Colorado. Not a state that you would expect have a significant number of EdTech founders, investors, and organizations supporting it. But as of last year, there is one based on the efforts of a few folks. So I'm really interested in seeing new communities start up. I look forward to joining and seeing what they have to bring to the table.
Absolutely. Well, if people are listening in and they'd like to find out more or to follow up, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Yep. So NY EdTech Week is the website as well as the Twitter handle. Myself, I'm at Ashanta IK on Twitter, and my email address is just ash@startedaccelerator.com.
Fantastic. Well, Ash, thank you so much for your time today, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you much, Sophie.
So I'm delighted to be here with Danny Pan. And Danny is the head of education technology and higher education for the DIT based out in Beijing. So welcome, Danny.
Thanks, Sophie. Thanks for the opportunity.
No worries. And I know that our listeners will be very interested in what you have to say, because whether they are leaders within schools or university brands or institutions, should I say, or on the EdTech and sort of more business side of things, everyone is very interested in the current climate in internationalizing. So what, from the conversations you've had this week and elsewhere, can you share with our listeners about, you know, what the top concerns of people are and what questions are they asking of you as well?
Actually, right now, especially for the EdTech suppliers from the UK, the major concern for them is first, how is the Chinese market look like? Because they have no idea what is Chinese market look like. And to be honest, like, Chinese market is totally different from the rest of the world. Like, the education system in China is quite kind of like the isolated. It's not like the other, like the Asia countries, maybe a UK EdTech suppliers. They can directly make an appointment with the Ministry of Education in that country and directly talk about, okay, how about we can just support your education system and we can just export our products to your country. But in China, it's not that kind of story, because China, Ministry of Education, they are kind of belong to the central government, and they only dealing with government to government relationships. So they won't dealing with any kind of like the business. So if the UK EdTech products, they want to come to China, the best way is they need to find a Chinese partner and let this Chinese partner to help them to distribute or to like the co-produce a new product which is fitting into the Chinese market. Because the curriculum in China is, I think, is totally different from the rest of the world.
And do you have any partners that, you know, are kind of approved from the Department for International Trade or that you recommend? Or I know that the other way that has found some success is joining some of the delegations that you send out to China, and obviously the work of BISA as well. But when you mention partners, are there any particular sort of pathways that you would recommend?
We do have some kind of good pathways for the UK EdTech Pro like suppliers to come to China. And as you mentioned, Sophie, like work with BISA is one way, and to join the trade missions to China is another way. And we do have some ways, like we were just a post like the Chinese demand, like the export opportunities on the Export is Great website. So from that website, all the UK suppliers can just dig out whether this opportunity is fit for their demand or not. Then After they register in that website, we will just collect all the UK suppliers' information and provide it to the Chinese suppliers.
Okay, and which website is that?
Export is Great, which is a DIT's like the main website. So we will post all kinds of like the export opportunity on that website. And another way is we do have kind of pool of the good partners in China, like from the government level to the agency level and to the business level. For the big names like the think tank of Ministry of Education, which is the National Institute of Education Sciences. They are the think tank of the Ministry of Education, and they can evaluate all the EdTech products and then give you feedback whether this is fitting in the Chinese market or not.
And can you remind us of what that was called again?
It's a National Institute of Education Sciences. And this is a kind of at the government level because they're the think tank of government. And for the business level, we do have those big names in China like New Oriental. So you can just search from the website. And another one is TAL. They're also another like the listed like the NASDAQ companies, but they are TAL and New Oriental are the two biggest.
And are those organizations now looking to export some of their expertise to schools and universities here as well?
Yes, they do the both ways, like the DIT is doing at the moment. We help the UK suppliers to do business in China, and we also help the Chinese investors to just build up their pipeline to put the money back to the UK. So this is like the both way side.
And your specialism around higher education?
Yes.
Are you having conversations also with universities that wish to come over and explore China?
Exactly. The reason why I also have the higher education remit is before DIT, my previous background are all in the higher education sector. I used to work for King's College London and Queen Mary University London. And before that, I also worked for a Chinese university to dealing with all the international corporations. So I do help a lot of like the UK universities to find opportunities in China, especially those kind of like TNE programs. But for the commercial opportunities right now, we do got a kind of sense in China is the technology transfer and the research outcome transfer has huge market in China. Because the Chinese government, they have the government funding to do this, like the co-funding the research projects, and then just transfer the research and technology into the productivity. And also, we do got a lot of inquiries from Chinese company. They have the demand for the technology from the UK, especially in the new energy, like the new materials, and also like the Internet of Things, that kind of like the research outcomes or technology.
So if I was listening in from King's College London, I mean, do they have a kind of satellite university in China?
No, because every university have the different kind of like story. The King's, they are doing more of those kind of like the consulting work. So they do have the partners in China, and they just give them advices how to run their own kind of like the this kind of joint programs. And they will provide all those kind of like the expertise. And also those kind of like the talents and the and also those kind of like the good resources to the Chinese partner, but not those kind of satellite campus.
Okay, then just to round off then, so we've mentioned some of the websites that people can go to.
Mm-hmm.
Which are the other events that they should go to if they're interested in China?
Like in China, we also have like the similar exhibitions like BET. Like the we have, because in China we have an association called China Educational Equipment Industry Association, which is like a counterpart of BISA. So in China, they have about like 3,000 members. So they will just arrange their own kind of exhibition twice a year, like one in spring, one in autumn.
And that's not GET?
That's not GET. The GET is kind of like the running by a media company called JMD. Yeah, but what I mentioned is this association is like a half like the government oriented. So they do have those kind of endorsement from the local government and central government. So that is why maybe you can just dig out more your potential partners in China. In China, they're good at hardware, but in the UK, we are good at software and content. So this is a good combination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Danny. And I really enjoyed us talking.
Thank you. Thank you, Sophie.
And I'm here with Aditya Gupta, who is the CEO of the India Didactics Association. So welcome.
Hi, thank you.
So first question, I know that you were here, you were at the Education World Forum. How are you finding the sort of education agenda in terms of what's currently being discussed in India and the rest of the world? So what was the kind of sense of the main discussion at the EWF?
Well, I think the main discussion around the EWF this year focused more towards education technology as a pervasive factor rather than just the tool which was going to change the world. What was really fun and good to see around was the ministers collaborating, coming together and agreeing on one single factor, that technology is not the solution. Technology is just a facilitator. And the role of the teachers are changing from education delivery to education facilitators. And there were no two ways about it, that whether it's Africa, Europe, Asia, across continents, everybody was in unison on this factor.
And for those people listening, the India Didactics Association, if you're from the UK, you might be familiar with BISA. So it's a similar organization to that?
It's pretty much similar on the BISA lines. We were modeling ourselves on the lines of BISA. The only difference being that we do have educational memberships as well. So when we started out in India, we realized that corporate memberships on the lines of BISA will just not work unless we have a huge network of educators on the ground. And that's where we went around changing the model. So as on today, we have more than 80,000 schools, colleges and educators as members of the association, plus another 150 corporate members and another 300 corporate members we work with, who are not corporate members, but the companies we work with beyond memberships.
And we were just talking about how, you know, so your member mix on the corporate side is, you know, not just EdTech, but anything to do with educational resourcing. And that, you know, EdTech isn't perhaps as pervasive yet in terms of sustainable businesses in India as sometimes we think it is when we're in the EdTech bubble. So for the most part, for an average Indian school, for example, could you talk a little bit about what kind of resources are those schools using and what part does EdTech play?
Well, India is, of course, a large country and you've got all kinds of segments and you can divide India into the country where the highest and the best brands of schools would be there using the topmost quality on technology. And then you would have issues with certain schools which are about just creating basic access. So brick and mortar schools with limited EdTech exposure. But overall, I think the growth of the country in the past two decades has been phenomenal. More and more schools are starting to understand the importance of EdTech. So EdTech, not just with the hardware side, which was probably the case in, let's say, 5 to 10 years back, where everybody just thought of hardware. Now people are getting the fact of EdTech is much more than the hardware, which is probably 5% of the whole solution. And getting into the content space, getting into the pedagogy, the delivery side, where EdTech can play a role. But still, a lot of schools in India have the challenge, and we start talking about better quality of furniture, better quality of outcomes, better quality of teacher training. As an association, we believe the crucial factor for the country like India is teacher training. Because yes, you can always train the current lot of students for a better skills, better employability. But if you want to have a sustainability model across the country, across all ministries, everybody's talking about teacher training as the core issue.
That's very interesting, because the gentleman from the Council of British International Schools was saying the exact same thing, that, you know, you've got all these new schools in China, for example, but where do you get the quality teacher training from, and, you know, making sure that all those schools have the right qualified teachers in them as well?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about both the levels, pre-service teachers and in-service teachers. And I'm very happy that the government of India has actually come out with a huge program for in-service teachers, reskilling and upskilling all of the teachers within the next 18 months. And that's quite a challenge for a country like India when we talk about 1.6 million schools and 52,000 colleges. And you're saying you want to actually reach out to millions of teachers and do that in 18 months. So we understand the importance of teacher training and the sustainability factor which comes with teacher training.
And are you finding the same interest in the sort of STEM, STEAM agenda in India as we have here in the UK?
There is an interest on that factor. But India has been traditionally a country which has been very strong with STEM education. So, I mean, if you talk about languages or mathematics and technology, India is probably, you know, you've got a city of Bangalore, which is known as second Silicon Valley of the world. So we talk about STEM. And yes, that the fact that STEM education is going down and there is a crisis which is coming up. But there are other challenges which probably take the priority. So I wouldn't say it's not important, but there are other issues which need priority right now.
And apart from CPD, what would you say are the top three challenges?
Access, quality, sustainability.
Very good. And sustainability in terms of resources and how they will still be here in 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely. I mean, so we can always have flash in the pan where somebody comes and does something great and builds up one school. But how do you make a scalable, sustainable model? That's always the case. You can always have private schools coming up and setting up one great center of excellence. But how do you make that scalable? How do you make that sustainable? is always going to be the challenge.
And do you share any best practice from schools throughout your 80,000 school network? Do you help to share that best practice?
We do. I mean, wherever and whenever we can try it. I think now the openness is coming in where educators are very willing to share the best practices, the solutions which are actually working, implementable solutions. Of course, when you start out as a developing country, there was always an hesitancy to say, why should we share what's the great happening? But more and more we see now that educators are coming forward, forums, conferences, exhibitions become the best model to share what's working and what's not.
And if people are listening in and they'd like to come to your event, which I know you also have, that's in October.
Yeah, so the exhibition's called Didac India, which happens from 4th to 6th of October. This year is the 10th edition happening in Delhi. And fortunately or unfortunately, this is the only exhibition in the country which brings together 10,000 educators from all across India and 31 countries across Asia.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
I'm here with Jamie Ralph, who is the Communications Officer for COBIS, also known as the Council of British International Schools. So welcome, Jamie.
Thanks, Sophie. Glad to be here.
My new thing this year, as I bought this book in the Tate at St Ives, and it's got loads of random questions. So all of my guests this week are going to answer some rapid-fire questions so that you can get to know them really quickly. So we'll do that, and then we'll do the industry and education chat. So let's just pick a random page. Why don't you pick a number?
Let's go for 66.
What's the best piece of advice that you've been given?
Fake it until you make it.
That's very good advice. If you could do a cameo in any movie, what would it be?
There's a great film called, an Irish film called Young Offenders that's based in Cork.
I've seen that. They go to the cave.
Yes.
And it's, it's really good.
Yeah, I went to university in Cork and I recognised all the places. So I would love to have had a cameo on that. It's so funny.
There's
so
a lot of good cycling scenes.
Yes, yeah. They go out into rural West Cork. It starts in the city and they get up to all sorts of shenanigans. And I'd love to be in that.
That would be a fun one to be in. And very beautiful as well.
Yes.
Okay, a few more. Could you live without your phone for a week?
Yes. I'd be up for trying it, at least. Yeah.
I guess as a comms person, that's quite hard. But yeah,
if I wasn't working, if I was on a week off and, you know, I went out into rural West Cork, maybe, I could definitely try it, but it'd be tough.
Whilst you do your cameo, you can ditch the phone. What was the last film you saw at the cinema?
I saw the new Martin McDonagh film called Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I saw that last week. It's up for a few Oscars, I think.
Okay.
Really good. Highly recommended. A thriller. It goes in so many different ways.
Okay, and then last one. When was the last time you were scared?
Can I say this morning when I saw the amount of people that are here, Bet?
It is quite overwhelming, isn't it?
I don't know if scared is the right word, but certainly overwhelmed. Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure it's like in our brain, we're going into fight or flight mode.
Yeah, you don't know where to go. There's just so many directions, so many stands, people trying to talk to you.
Yeah.
It's really good to have a plan, I think, beforehand, what you're going to do, you know?
Yes, definitely. So first up, can you tell me a little bit, perhaps, about COBIS, about what you do, and also what you're talking about here at BET as well?
Yeah, so... For people that don't know, COBIS, the Council of British International Schools, is the global association for British schools overseas. So we represent just under 300 British schools in 80 countries. We also have a small number of UK schools as well, usually UK schools who are looking to franchise abroad. So you have the likes of Dulwich and Harrow in China now. And we know there are many UK schools who are looking to open sister schools overseas as well. So we support them as well as the international schools that we have on our books. We have a range of services. Our sort of flagship service at the moment is an accreditation scheme for British schools overseas called the Patrons Accreditation, and that's named in honour of our patron, who's His Royal Highness the Duke of York. That launched last year, so it's the first time ever that COBIS actually goes out to schools and does school visits. So we send a team of schools out beforehand for the last... COBIS has gone since 1983, I believe, possibly 81, early 80s anyway, as we'll say. And
when were you born?
I was born in the late 80s, we'll say.
Yeah, I was born in 83. So
83, wow. Okay.
That's either going to make people feel old or young.
So COBIS is like nearly as old as you then, I guess, and a little bit older than me. But we've always had, you know, British International Schools who are members of COBIS, but we've never actually had a formal scheme for going out to visit the school, to quality assure the school. It's always traditionally been done through the likes of policies and document checking, things like that. But last year, we're in a privileged position to actually go out and start visiting the school. So, I mean, we've taken on some extra resource, extra capacity to do that, but it's gone amazing so far. We've had 45 schools already this academic year who've opted into the scheme. It's an alternative scheme to what the DfE offers for British schools overseas, which is called the BSO British Schools Overseas Inspection Scheme. So that's going well so far. Apart from that, I mean, we do a lot for students. We have the COBUS Games, which is essentially an Olympic Games for students in British international schools, athletics, swimming, football. That's been taking place for a number of years as well, always good fun. Apart from that, we do a lot of CPD for teachers, a lot of training for teachers overseas, and for the whole school workforce, to be honest. We have conferences for bursars, marketing staff, middle leaders, and HR, things like that. So we try to represent the whole school workforce in our events, and obviously the main COBUS event then is our annual conference, which takes place in May. This year is the 37th annual conference, so there you go. There you can tell how long COBUS has been going. And that's taking place at the O2 Intercontinental Hotel here in London, just close by to where we are today in the Excel Arena.
What are you speaking about here?
So I'll be speaking about how school associations such as COBUS can help edtech companies to enter the international market and export overseas for the first time. So I'm hoping to give some top tips on what companies need to think about before they start to sell to British international schools. And from my experience, I'm also going to reflect on what works and what I think doesn't work when it comes to sort of creating awareness of your brand, products or services on the global stage. A lot of my job is actually talking to edtech companies, a lot of whom who are exhibiting at BET, and understanding their strategy for exporting overseas. A lot of them have never exported overseas, they're just focusing on UK schools. So COBUS offers, you know, introductions to our schools and offers a lot of marketing help and help with their digital strategy in terms of reaching out to schools and you know, ultimately getting them to sell to schools.
What are those top tips?
My first one is you know, naturally enough, do your research on the different markets that we represent. You have a lot of UK companies who, when they think about selling to international schools, they go for the Middle East straight away. And that's not necessarily a bad strategy. You know, we have a lot of schools in the Middle East, in places like Dubai and Qatar and Saudi, who are very well resourced and who have a student population whose families are quite affluent. So it's not a bad strategy, but there are many other markets apart from the Middle East. You know, at the moment there's some emerging markets. We have a lot of COBUS schools in Romania, in Nigeria, other countries in Africa as well. So I mean, my first piece of advice would be just to look beyond the sort of typical cliched areas and look at schools in perhaps isolated areas who really, really need some good edtech products from the UK. My second piece of advice would be that basically when you start out selling to international schools, it's not a quick sell. It's not a quick thing that happens overnight. You know, it's you're in it for the long haul, really. We have a lot of companies who join COBUS as supporting members, and they might expect to, you know, be selling to a number of international schools within a year. But from my experience, it can take 4 to 5 years of schools getting to know you, getting to know your brand, of you coming to the COBUS conference, you know, utilizing our digital channels to create brand awareness before schools will actually start buying off you. So you have to be in it for the long haul, basically.
And then how about the quality assurance program that you mentioned? Is that for existing schools to sort of show a level of quality about your international schools, or is it also about UK schools wanting to go overseas and making sure that their franchise is of quality as well?
It's everybody, really, that every school that wants to be a member of COBUS. So it is the primary route to membership now. So over the next 5 years, we're looking to get all of our schools to go through this accreditation scheme. But anyone from since, I suppose, last year who wants to join COBUS will have to go through it as well. And what it is basically we published accreditation standards. We created these very high standards for international schools, which are based on a lot of different things. You know, we've included some things from the UN Rights of the Child and, you know, the best of other associations standards and the best of the DfE BSO scheme as well. And we've kind of bundled them all into one and come up with standards for COBUS schools and British international schools overseas. So, you know, when we go out there, schools are judged on things like teaching and learning, facilities, staff recruitment, boarding if they're a boarding school. So there's a lot of high standards that schools are judged on, and the criteria are available on our website if there's any schools listening that are hoping to get accredited by Qobuz. But as I said, it's been a great success so far.
And which countries are you seeing the most growth from in terms of your membership?
Well, at the moment, our colleagues at ISC Research, they hold the data for international schools, and I've been at a couple of their recent seminars at different conferences and things like that, and they talk a lot about China. China is the real emerging force for international schools. I think that ISC Research currently state that there's 9,000 English medium schools worldwide, and that's schools where English is the main language of tuition. 4,000 of those are British international schools. I believe that in the next 10 years that will double. So we're going to see double the amount of British international schools overseas, and so many of them are going to be in China. China are pumping a lot of money now into building more and more international schools, but the issue that we're starting to see is that we don't have the level of high quality teachers to be able to fill the ambitions of these schools in China. So Qobuz is going to do a lot of work over the next 5 years to try and ensure that high quality teachers who have been educated in UK universities are available and want to teach overseas to fill these spaces. From a Qobuz point of view, I actually see a lot of growth in, as I mentioned, countries like Romania and Nigeria and Africa as well. We've the most amount of Qobuz schools in the world are split between those two countries, surprisingly enough. I think we have up to 40 British international schools in Nigeria at the moment. A real emerging nation for British education. And they really, really buy into British education. The reputation of it over there is top-notch, you know. So Romania, Nigeria, Eastern Europe as well, Poland, former Soviet nations, Slovakia, the King's Group of Schools have just opened a new campus in Latvia now. So, you know, I'd encourage any companies listening who might want to deal with international schools to look at Eastern Europe, Africa, and China as well. China's going to be the big one.
And what's the current state of British international schools? So you mentioned the kind of CPD element of it, so perhaps making sure that CPD is continued at a level that we'd expect here. Also, who are the biggest competitors? Is that US schools or other schools?
Do you mean in terms of Qobuz or
in terms of other international schools, I suppose, that you find that your members are competing for students to come to their
schools?
Yeah,
I suppose. I mean, obviously, our schools are intrinsically British. So they will always have competitors in terms of other British schools in the same region, and also just straight international schools who might teach the IB, the International Baccalaureate. You'll always have American K-12 schools as well. So it really, really depends in terms of families what they want for their kids. And perhaps if they're an expat family from Britain, they'll obviously look towards a British school. But you know, at Qobuz, we'd always say that the British schools offer such a well-rounded curriculum, really good extracurricular opportunities, a very, very high level of pastoral care. So we'd like to say that the British international schools are of a very high standard. And we know anecdotally as well that a lot of parents do, even if they don't have connections to Britain, they do choose to send their kids to British schools for those reasons I mentioned.
And just finally, what sort of use of EdTech are you seeing among your member schools? Are there particular areas that people are more interested in? And also, what are the resources that help shape your thinking or support your learning in this area as well?
Cool. If I consider the schools that I work with, the level of engagement with EdTech is very diverse depending on school, region and country. I host a series of webinars on behalf of Qobuz, and we offer the opportunity for companies, a lot of EdTech companies included, to present an online seminar to our international schools. We naturally get questions in from school staff during the webinars, and you'll normally find that, as I mentioned, the well-resourced schools in the Middle East are already experimenting with the likes of like VR and AR and are ahead of the game when it comes to technology. But some schools in more developing countries can kind of lag behind, and you know, they might only be introducing iPads to the classroom now and experimenting with apps. So it really does differ depending on the region and how developed the country is. And this obviously presents a really good opportunity for any EdTech companies who haven't entered those markets yet to start a new relationship overseas. When I think of particular schools who have sort of visionary heads, who understand the importance of technology, People like Mark Steed at Jumeirah English Speaking School, Jess in Dubai. I've seen Mark speak at conferences, and he really gets the technology side of things. He's definitely one to follow on Twitter if you'd like to get a better sense of the latest uses of EdTech from an international perspective. And also as well, I've been impressed with Mark Anderson, the ICT evangelist, who many listeners might know. He spoke at a recent conference of ours in Amsterdam, and we also had him on a Qobuz webinar. And he had the webinar attendees encapsulated by an exercise he did with an app called Ping Pong. And it allows students to answer questions and participate in quizzes in real time using their devices, and kind of gives like instant stats and percentages on the number of right and wrong answers. I was really, really impressed with that. So that's sort of what I'm seeing through our Qobuz webinars and tech companies we work with.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for your film recommendations as well, Jamie.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Sophie.
Delighted to be here with a delegation from Sweden. So if you could introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Oliver. I'm the CEO of Skolon, Swedish edtech startup.
And my name is Peter Mattisson. I'm chairman of Skolon and also a chairman of Swedish edtech industry.
My name is Henning Sahl, and I'm coming from working with Business Sweden, the Swedish Trade and Invest Council.
Perfect. And we're having a good natter about the various similarities and differences between Sweden and the UK. If you could give a kind of rough picture for how you perceive education innovation and edtech to be going in Sweden, that would be great. And again, you mentioned the one-to-one iPad scheme that's sort of come through government, so that might be quite interesting to talk about as well.
Yes, absolutely. If you look in Sweden, we have had some years now where very many new startups coming in, a lot of investments also in edtech, so we see very many new solutions out in the market. But what we see now is that government is coming in, structuring up, like, how should we get the digital in schools? They try to digitalize the exams, they try to bring out computers and so on. So by 2020, you should have your own computer in Swedish schools. So I think now is it coming from the top, from the start. Like 5 years ago, it has become from the bottom, from teachers that want to get digital and so on. But now I think we will see that we're meeting up in the middle.
And so that's been mandated as well. So it absolutely has to happen by 2020 that everyone will have their
absolutely,
own iPad.
Absolutely. So maybe not 2020 will be, they will make it. But I think maybe some years later, I think we will see definitely more digital content and more digital apps in schools. Absolutely. A big change from now.
And so I'm not sure if I understand this correctly, but I heard that there is a significant investment in edtech in Sweden, and then the actual results around STEM had kind of dipped. So are you sort of seeing a pushback around the kind of efficacy and measurement of edtech that's similar to we are having in the UK, that there's a much more rigorous focus on what's working, you know, in order to make sure that the investment actually has some kind of effect as well?
Absolutely. I think that is a debate that is coming up much right now. We had some very successful Swedish tech companies like Spotify, like Skype and so on, and I think very, very many edtech companies are just coming in that wave, but now you're focusing more, okay, what is the value for the education side of edtech and what is the real purpose in school? And I think we see a change there from some years ago when it was more early edtech companies, they were getting money quite easy. Now it's harder, and you really need to bring value to the classroom to be successful.
And what's the role in government in terms of investment as well? Are they directly funding some of the projects, or?
They have some kind of funding, yes. Not companies such as, but projects in digitalization, like how to invest more in teachers' knowledge around technology, how to use it in the classroom, studies around the effect of using technology in the classroom and like that. So that is something you see investment in. But the investment in companies come from private sectors, absolutely.
And Peter, you head up EdTech Sweden. What are the big concerns of EdTech companies out there in Sweden?
I think one of the concerns is, what is the government going to do, and what are they letting the private sector work with? So I think that's a very important question, because if you want to have an innovative kind of sector like edtech has to be, if you want to be successful, as a country, Sweden and Scandinavia, every country, I think. I think you must have opportunities for the private sector to invest and have success in the edtech sector.
So is that more sort of around the financial structures and providing incentives to make that happen? And
I don't think we have so much support from the government and in that kind of way, but in Sweden, we, in Scandinavia, I think we have a lot of technological success companies, and I think we're going to have that in edtech sector as well.
And can you name drop, obviously you mentioned your own company, but are there particular sort of success stories around education innovation or edtech that, you know, are coming through Sweden that are more representative of sustainable businesses as well?
Absolutely, we have some. In like digital exams, we are in the forefront in Sweden. We have DigiExam, for example, who is now operating both here in UK and in New York, for example. From Norway, you have the company Kahoot that is becoming like a global phenomenon.
On the podcast before.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you have some absolutely some successful companies. Then you have more traditional IT companies like the school administrative system that are now expanding into Europe and so on. I think we as a country were earlier in cloud technologies and so on than many other countries. So I think companies that invested in cloud technology quite early, which we have quite many in Sweden, especially in the edtech sector, can now expand it into Europe and other countries that are now looking into cloud computing but didn't have made the investment in new systems and so on. So as a Business Sweden perspective, as you see, I think you see right now that many companies have the possibility from Sweden to go out in Europe with the services we already made and built.
Okay, very interesting. Maybe we should speak to Henning. So Henning, hello.
Hello.
So for anyone familiar with the UK edtech scene, you're the equivalent of Vipul from our Department for International Trade. And, you know, when you're talking to edtech companies, where are they interested in expanding? And, you know, where are you seeing sort of traction in terms of what they're developing and its relevance internationally as well?
So my own experience doesn't stretch too far on that point, but we do see that we have a good base of really innovative Swedish edtech companies, and here in the UK, so we have an office here in London, Business Sweden, and here in the UK we see a similar degree of edtech development as in Sweden. So I think for Swedish companies to enter in the UK, it's challenging due to tough competition, but you also have great opportunities if you enter the UK market to develop from tough competition and progressive schools that want to adapt in edtech.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you all for giving us a little quick insight into what's happening in Sweden. If people want to find out more, do you have any Twitter handles or websites that you want to drop in there?
You should visit businesssweden.se. We not only do help Swedish companies to go abroad, but we also promote investments to Sweden. You're welcome to reach out to Business Sweden if you're interested in opportunities in Sweden as well.
And of course, you can look at swedishedtechindustry.com and see more about the Swedish edtech companies.
That's all from this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening in. If you'd like to join our podcast community, do head over to Facebook, Instagram or Twitter at Podcast EdTech. And wherever you are and however you're listening in, have a good week.